Hey, folks. How's everybody doing out there? This is Vinay, the host of the Shiny Happy People podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I did another interview and another conversation with somebody who's in the learning space. And we're 6 months into this year. And hopefully the pandemic is way far behind us. The reason I mention it is this whole conversation is around online learning and how that's changed, pivoted, accelerated in the pandemic, and what that's going to be looking like now that the pandemic is at its tail end. So the conversation I have had is with Samir Agarwal. And Samir Agarwal is the country head and the leader for LinkedIn Learning in India. He started his career as a dot-com entrepreneur, and it was a really fun conversation getting into his early days of entrepreneurship, especially when the internet had just started. He's got a funny comment about how he did email as a service, so stay tuned for that. And he's worked in large organizations and has started his third transition into LinkedIn for almost 9-10 years ago. He's the head of sales for LinkedIn Learning and Engagement. And it's a fun conversation that he and I had about how does he see online learning change, evolve, and what that's going to look like in the next few years. And of course, Samir also makes a breaking news towards the end of our conversation. So stay tuned, folks. You'll hear Samir and I get into our conversation right after this break. Okay, folks. So we've got our guest here with us. Samir, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Vinay. Thank you for having me here.
So Samir, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the genesis of Samir. Samir, how did you get to where you are today from where you started? Who is Samir?
Well, the way I would like to describe Samir is a dad to an 11-year-old. My daughter, Jyotsna, she is quite a handful. She keeps me busy. She keeps me inspired every single day. But how I got here, and I was thinking through this, and I would, like to break up my professional journey into four parts. Mm-hmm. The first part is what I would call flying without wings. And what I mean by that is that, I was straight out of college and I could have taken up a job. And I decided instead to get into entrepreneurship. So I knew nothing about the internet, but internet was very hot. I was getting a job for 6,000 rupees. This was in 1998. My dad was alive then, and my dad and I had a conversation, and he was like, do you want to take up this job or do you want to do something together in the space of internet? And I was like, I know nothing about it. He was like, doesn't matter, we'll pick it up. And so we did. So there used to be this magazine called PC Quest.
I remember that?
And there was a CD which came along with it, which was in HTML. So we put the CD in the CD player. You could right-click, view source. And that's how I picked up HTML. So we dabbled with a few things. We started selling email as a service. Not everybody had an email address at that point of time. So we started creating email addresses for small businesses. We would collect their email, take prints, and deliver it to them. That was quite interesting. And then we started building some websites as well. We built the first e-commerce website in India for PVR Cinemas.
Oh, wow.
So that was quite interesting as well. But then the dot-com bust happened. I went back to school. But it was a very interesting first 4 years of my professional career. And that's what I call flying without wings.
Wow. So there's so many things to double click on that one. So you were definitely in the early days of the internet, right? So email as a service that doesn't exist anymore. And also helping people set up email accounts and all of that. So you've seen the evolution of the internet and everything that's happened since then. And you went back into school and studying. So it must be interesting to start off as an entrepreneur right early on and then decide to move back into the corporate world, right? Move into the corporate world. How was that transition for you and what led you to go into the corporate world?
Yeah, I guess it wasn't that hard because really I had no option. There was a dot-com bust. We didn't really have any money. So like, okay, one has to do something. I was young, that helped. And that's why the second phase of my journey, which is what I call getting on my feet. So I went back to school, did my MBA, got into AD Kearney, got into something called knowledge management, which is quite interesting. Then moved to GE. And from there, went on to HP. So really understanding, you know, how the world works and how a corporate job works and so on and so forth. So that was really just kind of quite different, but it really helped me establish my fundamentals as well. When I look back now, at that point of time, like I said, you know, I don't want to jazz it up unnecessarily. It was okay. I was very young. I think I was 23 when the dot-com bust happened. So going back to school and getting into the corporate world wasn't that hard.
Yeah. So what's the one big, so I know you said it wasn't that hard and you had the getting back, I think you had the school as a transition period, right? To go from that. So what's that one thing that you still miss from the good old entrepreneurial days that you were in the early days? Is there something that you miss from those days?
Yeah. I mean, just the freedom to do whatever, not worry about the consequences as much. Right. Living in the moment, I guess, trying, failing, trying again. A corporate job kind of ties your hands a little bit that way. A lot of times for good reasons. But yeah, definitely something that I miss.
Yeah. And you can't do those. You got to worry about those moves, which could become career limiting moves in the corporate world. Right? Entrepreneur, you can just fall on your own sword over there if you have to.
Absolutely.
But you're responsible for that. And you don't hear things like stakeholder management, which you have to do in the corporate world when you are an entrepreneur perspective. The companies you mentioned, right? You talked about AT Kearney, then you did GE, very, very much an HP, the very blue chip sort of organizations, and how's your journey been through those? What's been your biggest learnings of being in the corporate world?
I mean, my corporate journey is still kind of continuous and we'll talk more about that. But I guess just understanding how processes work and how processes can be a double-edged sword. So you need processes to scale, but when you get too involved in processes, failing to see what those processes were developed for in the first place, that can mean the end of a project, end of a business, end of a career. So I guess just understanding both sides of what being process-oriented really means is my biggest takeaway from corporate jobs. Of course, you spoke about stakeholder management. And I believe that's quite important, actually. You know, even if you're an investor, you got to manage your investors.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Everybody has a boss, right? I mean, we fail to sometimes see the bosses that exist in various shapes and forms. But it's just that stakeholder management is something one can learn really effectively from corporates, especially large multinational corporates.
Yeah, absolutely. And a large part of your roles have been leveraging what you started to do as an entrepreneur, right? Sales, digital, haven't they? Or have you done any career pivots within that?
I mean, look, the fundamentals remain the same. And when you start off as an entrepreneur, you're anyway starting off really wide, right? So whatever you're going to do next is in a way going to be a subset of it. Having said that, you know, if I talk about my corporate journey and I've done multiple things, whether it's digital, whether it's, you know, just web development. I've been a coder as well, been in sales, I've been in the IT industry. I've been in the internet industry. I mean, one could think of the various things I've done as pivots. So I have, you know, I've always hated to put myself into, you know, those boxes. So for example, at HP, I was an analytics practitioner. So it's a very techie sort of a job, right? So you're building predictive models, and you say you're building predictive models, but you're doing a lot of reporting and all of those things. So you become whizzes in things like Excel and SAS and whatnot. And from there, you know, moving back to the internet industry, which I consider my first love and perhaps, you know, my longest love, when I got into LinkedIn 10 years ago, in a lot of ways, you know, that was kind of a pivot as well.
So what made you, because you spent how long with HP? You were all there almost 7 years, I guess.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. And then in 2013 began my third phase. So I spoke about my two phases already. One was flying without wings. So that was the entrepreneurial journey without really knowing what the consequences would look like. Second was getting on my feet, really just learning the way the world works with Eddie Carnegie and HP, and then LinkedIn, right? And I mentioned to you that the internet has been my first love, my longest love now. I've been married 16 years. So just to be clear, internet kind of precedes that. So I think I came to LinkedIn in 2013, and the biggest reason was that I wanted to be with the internet industry. And it felt like the right time to be at LinkedIn, because, you know, LinkedIn was just kind of setting up in India, and I really didn't want to miss this opportunity to be on the rocket ship. And rocket ship it has been, you know, from practically zero in 2013, we are like a multi-million dollar business within India now in the past 10 years. And, you know, I've been fortunate to do several things here. You know, I started off in a hiring business, did that for a few years. And then later on in 2019, I moved on to our newly established learning business. And what a ride it has been. So I really came into my own, is what I believe.
Yeah. So that, I was just about to ask, I mean, when you joined LinkedIn, you know, almost 10 years ago, right? It was a very, very different organization, or LinkedIn, the usage itself was very different to what it is today. What do you see as the biggest transformation that's happened at LinkedIn? I mean, I'm a big user of LinkedIn. We use it a lot in our, both as a professional in our business and for all of our communication with our, so many aspects of it. But what have you seen as the biggest transition in the last 10 years?
Look, the most unique thing about LinkedIn is that our vision has always been the same. Our vision is to create economic opportunity for every member of the global workforce. And that has existed. So hats off to Reid Hoffman for having such a vision way back in 2003 when LinkedIn as a platform started. Of course, we kept kind of evolving LinkedIn. So, you know, when LinkedIn started off, it was a professional networking platform, and I don't think anybody really knew how to monetize it. And over the years, we, you know, figured what that flywheel really looks about, because, you know, any internet business is about understanding what your flywheel is, and then building monetary adjacencies out of it. So hiring was a no-brainer, obviously, because a lot of people will create their professional profiles. Companies would create their profiles, so you could start matching those profiles. So from an enterprise business, that made a lot of sense. Then over the years, we started our marketing business, which again was a no-brainer, because ads was anyway the first thing that we started with. But, you know, we started doing that at scale, selling into enterprise companies, helping them generate leads, especially from a B2B standpoint. Then we created our sales solutions business, which really was that, you know, people want to reach out to other people, not just to find jobs or not just to hire them, but also to surface business opportunities. So this whole concept of identifying leads, nurturing leads, and engaging with leads is what really ended up becoming our sales solutions business. So we continue broadly with those three lines of businesses. Around 2015, we realized that we were sitting on vast amounts of data, and we gave it a name. We started calling it the economic graph. And the whole idea is that we know so much about the professionals in the world, right? So today we have more than 900 million professionals who tell us a thing or two about themselves, right? So we have a handle on that. Pretty much every company in the world is on LinkedIn. Pretty much every job that these companies have are on LinkedIn. And therefore, the skills required for those jobs are also on LinkedIn. And when you identify the relationships between each of these things, you are sitting on a wealth of information which you can leverage for multiple things. And what we came to realize was that ultimately, it was all about skills. In fact, we believe skills is the new currency, right? And with our economic graph, we had the ability to predict skills because if companies are posting jobs for certain skills, we know what kind of skills are trending, right? We could tell people what kind of skills are trending as well, so they could upskill in those areas. But what was missing really was LinkedIn itself helping people acquire those skills.
A very natural progression to do it, right? From talent to skills to now acquisition of those skills. So it's such...
Absolutely. And that's why we acquired lynda.com, which was the largest e-learning company and amongst the first e-learning companies that came into existence. And then, you know, we made it our own. We called it LinkedIn Learning. And the idea was to kind of link it to our flywheel, right? Because ultimately everything has to kind of go back to LinkedIn.com. Anyway, I can go on and on there, but you know, the vision itself is just so powerful. So the short answer to your question is that our vision has always remained the same, but we've continued identifying sub-missions to really help us get closer and closer and closer to our vision.
No, I think it makes so much because I remember when the announcement was made that LinkedIn's buying lynda.com, and there was a lot of buzz in the space saying, oh, what are they doing here? Well, what's LinkedIn going to do with it? But it just seemed a lot of the narrative was, it is so natural to, they must have so much information on all the skills that's required out there in the market, because with all the talent acquisition that's happening on LinkedIn, it only makes sense to help people acquire those skills. So it was such a natural progression.
You're listening to the Shiny Happy People podcast with Vinay Kumar. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. This podcast is sponsored by C2COD, your organizational development consulting partner, bringing people and strategy together. Follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook using the handle at C2COD and get updates on our upcoming episodes.
So what's been overall, and you're heading the whole learning space for India, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And so you must have seen that evolve significantly as well, because you know, online learning, e-learning, or whatever you want to call it, took on such massive interest in 2018 and 2019. And then lo and behold, you had the pandemic that came in and everything went to online learning. How's that been a transition for you? What was it like for you personally being in the middle of all of that transformation that was happening?
No, I mean, that's a very pertinent question. And the last thing I want to do is to sound like an ambulance chaser. And what I mean by that is that COVID came and therefore our business flourished. I do believe that, e-learning was kind of waiting to come into its own. There were already signs of it kind of becoming like the next big thing. If you talk about the 90s was all about instructor-led training. The world had started to realize that, you need to upskill your people, but that was all happening through classroom sessions and instructor-led trainings. And then slowly companies realized that if you have to scale your learning efforts, you have to bring in components of e-learning, right? And even today, that stays true. It's not as if e-learning totally replaces instructor-led training or offline learning, but there has to be some sort of a blend which has to be in your scheme of things. In fact, that's what gave rise to your learning management systems, because you know, administering your compliance trainings and various other aspects was very, very important. When it came to the pandemic, of course, the companies around the world had no choice but to do everything digitally. So definitely there was a significant boost, both in terms of consumption by end users, as well as companies administering e-learning themselves. But the way it has also evolved, and by the way, the pandemic is kind of towards its fag end, and you know, you and I both are in office today, but that doesn't mean that people have stopped e-learning altogether just because they can get back into the office. And that's why I was saying that, you know, it was always kind of waiting to happen, but we did get a little bit of kind of acceleration during those times.
Yeah, it was definitely a tailwind. It was, or somebody said, right, the whole edtech and online learning just had a whole bunch of fuel thrown onto the barbecue, just heated up the whole thing faster as well.
Yeah.
But learning's been around. I mean, early 2000s, mid 2000s, and that's where lynda.com was making its business.
Yes.
On it, right? So it just was a interesting accelerant, if you want to call it there. But I think even the one big thing I noticed, and I'd love to hear your perspective, the portfolio of what was available was much more narrower point in time. And the portfolio of what became available, just people wanted to learn anything and everything. Before, it was something that okay for online, the rest let's go and do instructor-led. But then when that choice of instructor-led went away, they said, oh, we can learn this as well online. I don't know if that became true, whether your lynda.com portfolio that you guys acquired to the LinkedIn Learning portfolio that exists today, I'm guessing there's been a massive expansion in it. Would that be true?
That is absolutely true. And, you know, some time ago, I spoke about our economic graph, which gives us the ability to predict the skills of the future, right? And lynda.com was doing a great job in terms of identifying what kind of content to create and what would resonate really and so on. But because we have this ability to predict the skills of the future, we obviously are able to inform our content strategy. This is that, right? So that's number one. Number two, of course, you know, when it comes to learning, fundamentals don't change. You know, learning is all about three things: content, community, and outcomes.
Right.
However, when it comes to outcomes, the way the world has started looking at outcomes has changed. And I'll double click on that. But the way the world is looking at outcomes has changed. The way the world is looking at communities has changed. And obviously, you know, we've kept pace with this, and our content kind of corresponds with, you know, the kind of communities that we're building on LinkedIn and the kind of outcomes that we are able to create for people. So there has been a major, major transformation on those aspects. Yeah. So look, I mean, when it comes to community, LinkedIn always had an edge. And I'm not talking about lynda.com right now, but I'm talking about LinkedIn, because the whole LinkedIn experience. And look, ultimately, you know, and everybody is talking about it today. It's about how you can bring learning in the flow of work.
Yeah,
I can have 10 things sitting around me, but I mean, the biggest thing with learning is, you know, some people need to learn. Everybody, it's like a gym. You can open a gym in your office, but how do you take people to the gym? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
The same holds true for learning. The good thing or the competitive edge that we always had as LinkedIn Learning was that we have LinkedIn.com. And pretty much every professional in the world is visiting LinkedIn.com at least once a week, right? A large majority of professionals in the world are visiting LinkedIn.com every single week. And if I have a captive audience on LinkedIn.com, I can actually give them nudges to actually start learning. So I can give let's say, you know, I go to LinkedIn.com and I'm connected to you, Vinay, then I could get a nudge which says, hey, Vinay is doing this particular course on resilience. Would you like to do it as well? So that's how I take a learner to the temple, right? And of course, you know, we are kind of sharpening our AI for the past so many years to make sure that the personalized recommendations, the kind of things that I spoke about just now, continue to get sharpened and also create this community of learners in the process.
Sorry, but that's a very interesting thing on the references. And, you know, sometimes there's a FOMO, right? If I see 10 people all learning a skill and I'm thinking, hang on, why am I not doing this? And let me also pick, I need to learn this as well because I'm going to be behind the game. There is that element of it. But I just wanted to quickly do a follow-up there. For LinkedIn Learning, and I know your role, is it, so there's two parts of it, if I understood, if I see it. There's the end user, the B2C part of the business, where I can take a LinkedIn Learning account and sign up for courses. But there's also the enterprise, right? When organizations buy for all of those employees. And with the when the organizations buy them or the enterprise, it becomes their responsibility a little bit to get usage, utilization up and incorporate that learning into their flow of work. Is your strategy very different to target both those? I mean, how do you, and where's the payoff?
I mean, great question. And that's the third element of outcomes, right? And there are outcomes from an individual's perspective, there are outcomes from an organization's perspective. I personally believe that when there is alignment between the outcomes that an individual wants and the organization wants, when there is that alignment, that's where magic happens. Right. Now, when it comes to anything related to talent problems for a company or career thoughts for an individual, there are three things that come to mind. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of just mixing it all up, but broadly, right? One is a hiring problem from a company's perspective.
Yeah.
Second is the retention problem. And that totally is from a company's perspective. And third is a skilling problem. Let me start with the skilling problem. Now, everybody knows that the half-life of skills is reducing, right?
Yeah.
Now, just to throw some data points, now we are in 2023 right now. So there has been a 30% change in skills for the most common jobs just from 2015 to now. That's the India average. And that number will go up to 50% by 2025, just 2 years from now, like 50%. Yeah. By the way, the government sector, you know, since 2015, when we looked at this data, 40% skills in the government sector have changed, right?
Yeah.
So that is the huge skilling problem. And the thing is that individuals also recognize this. Now, this is an opportunity for organizations to really kind of bring learning in the flow of work, because ultimately access creates consumption. And that's not my line. I mean, I was watching this show called, there was this show on Spotify, on Netflix, The Playlist. The Playlist, fantastic show. Anyway, the line is from there, access creates consumption. So if organizations can actually create this access really available to their employees, ultimately it will drive consumption as well. And you know what? Because employees know that there is such a massive skilling problem in the world, they know that they need to continually upskill themselves. And therefore, it has become a strong lever for employee retention as well as development. And that's why I was saying there is alignment happening as far as each of these things are concerned. And then lastly, hiring again. You know, even if I have to solve for my career, I know I won't get my next job, whether it is within the same company or outside, if I don't upskill myself. So I think that's broadly how this alignment is happening.
No, I think it's true, right? Because everybody wants to stay relevant, especially in the skilling aspect with the opportunities that are out there. You can, and as you said, the shelf life of skills is now, I don't know what the latest is, but certain skills are going away within 6 months of you picking it up. Crazy. You're in a very unique spot, Sameer. I think India, correct me if I'm wrong, but as a user of LinkedIn, India probably has the highest number of users on LinkedIn worldwide. Would that be accurate to say?
Yeah, we have 100 odd million users. And the best thing is that we haven't even really started. So, yeah. I mean, if you look at the workforce, there's a white collar workforce, the blue collar workforce, and there is an emerging gray collar workforce, right? Which is somewhere in the middle. I don't know if we are just ready for blue collar yet, but you know, if gray collar is massive, right? All these people who work in the Starbucks of the world and things like that, right? And there's a massive opportunity for LinkedIn to do something in that space. So India is definitely a focus country for LinkedIn, just to try and see how we can even improve the liquidity of membership on our platform here.
Yeah. And given that it's so significant and you're sitting here heading, would you say that the learning usage, LinkedIn Learning's usage or utilization from India is on its way up? And if so, what are the top 4 or 5 skills that they're looking at, the programs that seem to be the you must have like your own Spotify list, the top 5 programs of this quarter or something like that. You should publish those as well.
Right. We do actually. We do publish those, and clearly, you know, we need to do a better job because
if I haven't seen it,
But I mean, you're right. I mean, things are on the right track. We've seen a lot of surge in consumption of our content on the platform. Continues to kind of grow at a CAGR of more than 50-60% year over year, and we have been on this trend for the past 4 to 5 years. And you're right, I mean, COVID definitely accelerated that consumption, but now people are kind of hooked onto it. And specifically in terms of themes, I mean, of course, there are hard skills that people are spending their time on, mostly on tech. So AI is the hottest these days. So in fact, we've created a playlist of, you know, top courses in AI, and we've made that absolutely free for anybody to just go ahead and learn. So AI continues to be like top of that list when it comes to hard skills. And then few skills like Python and Excel, which continue to remain on the top of our charts. But what we're also seeing is that there is consistent demand for soft skills. No. And, you know, my personal belief is that tech is going to evolve so fast. I mean, while those are important, but what's really critical for everybody today is to build a solid foundation of soft skills.
Yeah.
Because one could say they are like evergreen skills. I mean, of course, they will also keep evolving and, you know, there'll be newer nuances in those soft skills. But that's where we are seeing a lot of uptick in consumption as well. So we have courses on emotional intelligence. We have courses on communication. We have courses on resolving internal personal conflict. We have courses on wellness, which are resonating with our audience quite a bit.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's interesting. And wow, that's amazing that you guys are doing the making the top AI programs available for everybody to pick it up. You know, as you said, right, without a fee or whatever it might be. But that is sort of brilliant. What do you think is going to be the skills next year? If you had a crystal ball, what would be the top 5 skills 12 months down the road? And if Samir's probably got the AI answering that question, you probably should.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I don't want to say that this is the list of skills that we predict to be on top. But
what are the themes? The themes, maybe.
Absolutely. So happy to talk about the theme. So I definitely think that, you know, on the technical side, AI will continue to keep center stage and just using AI more effectively. So ethical AI, responsible AI, from a management consumption perspective, I think those kind of themes should surely be trending. From a practitioner perspective, you know, just how to use prompts in AI more effectively, for example, in ChatGPT, those kind of things will become quite important. Excel and, you know, some of the reporting tools, I believe will continue for a little while as well. So I think that'll be there. And from a soft skills perspective, and there's a reason why they're called evergreen skills, right? I don't see a dramatic shift from the list I shared with you earlier to what it might be next year. But
there's so many other people who need to get up to speed on those skills as well, right? And there's no benchmark of saying, okay, I've done it. I'm perfect in communication. It's continuously evolving. You'll always get better on it.
Absolutely. And by the way, you know, on that, we do try to keep continuous engagement with people even after they've done courses, right? So let's say you did a course on emotional intelligence on LinkedIn Learning. You can actually join a learning group there. So that's like cohort-based learning, which kind of continues even after you've completed the course. And the idea is to just keep that conversation on. And whenever there are refreshers, et cetera, or whenever there are more perspectives from other people kind of coming in, they kind of keep reaching people.
Yeah. So here's a question. As this COVID thing is tapering off, is there, I know you're growing because overall the market's growing, but have you seen an impact of people wanting to go back into the ILTs, or is it a hybrid, or does LinkedIn Learning ever plan to do some ILT stuff as well? Is that ever on the cards?
So look, you know, we spoke about the hiring, retention and skilling problem anyway. Those problems are not going anywhere.
They're not going away.
They're definitely not going away. And I do believe there is space for instructor-led training. There always will be, whether you do virtual instructor-led training or you do like face-to-face, offline sort of instructor-led training. That will continue. But really, the keyword here is blended learning. You know, even if you're creating a leadership development program, it's not as if you'll impart or you'll want to impart all the learning in those 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, one month, whatever the program duration is. You will always supplement it with e-learning. So I definitely believe there is opportunity for both of these things to coexist. Now, to answer your next question in terms of whether LinkedIn will get into instructor-led training, I would say never. We do have some interactions going on already. So we have something called office hours on our platform where our instructors actually engage with learners on the platform using a virtual ILT sort of a method. And ultimately, you know, people not just learn from people also learn with people. So, you know, those communities that I was talking about, we'll continue to enrich those, ensure that there is interaction not just between instructors and learners, but also learners and learners, because the best form of learning is cohort-based learning, right? So we'll continue to make investments there. When it comes to the tech side, of course, you know, there are a lot of opportunities to provide hands-on learning, so creating simulated environments where people can practice. Even when it comes to soft skills, I definitely think there is opportunity to create some sort of practice environments. The way AI is evolving, that day is not too far when, you know, you'll perhaps be able to practice your next keynote with an AI bot. There are certain tools available in the market already for that. So who knows? But all of this, by the way, I'm just guessing. So in the spirit of never say never, it's not like an official announcement that we're going to launch these products. I want to be clear about that.
Fair point. And you know, in our business as a OD consulting firm, when we design learning journeys, LinkedIn Learning plays a huge role as in our hybrid program. When we do the instructor-led face-to-face workshops, participants have come in doing some LinkedIn Learning programs as pre-work, or they go back out and do some more of them as post-work and between sessions. So it's always been a very integrated approach, and never say never is a good mantra in our business, because we have no idea what's going to happen down the road, right?
Absolutely.
So what's next for Sameer? I mean, where do you see yourself in the next 12 months? We see where the industry is. What's Sameer going to be up to in the next 12 months?
So what Sameer is going to be up to is actually quite interesting. And I know this is a public podcast, so happy to share it. There's nothing confidential about it. So I just remember I was talking about the four phases, as I see it, of my professional journey. My fourth phase is about to begin. I call this phase being ready for an adventure. So what's happening is that my wife, Sakshi, has taken up a job in the UK. She's very excited about it. And, you know, we discussed as a family as to what we want to do. And we were very clear that, you know, we just want to be together as a family, be fearless in terms of what the future holds, you know, from the perspective of, you know, what I'm going to do next. So what's next for me is something I don't know. And by the way, I'm loving it because I haven't had this kind of unpredictability since 2002. So I'm getting to experience unpredictability and hoping for some serendipity to happen after 20 years. So very, very excited for this adventure that kind of awaits me.
Oh, brilliant. So a year from now, we'll be talking to you in the UK. So that's one thing that we'll know.
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, Sameer, we've taken a lot of your time. There's a couple of things that we ask all our guests. And one is, it's kind of an interesting question for you. You are in heading LinkedIn Learning in India. So how do you learn? What are things that you read, watch, or listen? Any recommendations? How do you keep yourself up to speed? What would be your recommendations to our listeners? What are you currently reading, watching, or listening?
Okay, so I'll answer this question in two parts. What I'm reading, listening to, and watching, and what I generally do. What I generally do is LinkedIn Learning, and I'm not saying it just because the role that I'm in. LinkedIn Learning has this cool little thing where I can set up a weekly goal for myself. So that just helps me to show up, because it's all about showing up, right? So I make it a point to spend at least an hour on LinkedIn Learning every single week, sometimes to listen to podcasts, sometimes doing certain courses. The latest I've done is just on AI. It's called the AI Dilemma. Fantastic course. And I'd be happy to share the link with you. It's one of those 300 courses that I spoke about. So that's what I'm doing right now. Otherwise, you know, but I keep watching Netflix like so many of us. I'm watching The Recruit right now. It's a pretty interesting show. Already done with three episodes on the fourth one. So let's see, you know, how the story of this boy evolves. And what I'm reading right now is a very interesting book. It's called 8 Rules of Love by Jay Shetty. In fact, I went for his, he had like a show in Bangalore last weekend. So I went for his show as well. So a big Jay Shetty fan. And I'm going on this adventure. So I definitely need some love. And that's why I'm reading that book.
Okay, excellent. You know, and my final question for you is, we're the Shiny Happy People podcast. So how do you, what's your mantra for staying positive? You've seen stuff evolve. There was business stuff, and how do you keep yourself motivated, positive? What do you do? What are your rituals or secrets for success? Your tips?
Sure. I mean, I think very basic stuff. I make sure I exercise almost every day. A healthy body leads to a healthy mind. I do meditate often. The biggest thing, though, is, and this is something I've learned over the years, I wasn't like this earlier, but I think I've picked it up for the past few years, and that is to not take myself too seriously, because we tend to just take ourselves too seriously and we create all those pressures that do not really need to exist. So if I have to leave you with one thought, that thought will be, don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah, no, I echo that, Sameer. I always say, I don't take myself seriously, but I take the work that I do very seriously. Right?
Sure.
That's a very simple way of doing that. Brilliant, Samir. Thank you so much. And all the best, man, on your adventure that you're doing, phase four of your life. So brilliant, Samir. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Vinay.
So we brought Samir's big announcement straight to you. It was the first place, hopefully you've heard it. But you need to definitely track Samir and his career growth. In a year from now, he'll be in an interesting place and we should see what he's up to. Okay, our next guest will be part of Druti interviewing another entrepreneur as part of the Resilient Entrepreneur series. And I will be back with another guest interview. Stay safe, folks. Keep having fun, stay smiling, and stay happy. Over and out.